Well, thank you. Thank you, Ruth. And thanks to Lynn. Where's Lynn? There she is, that contacted me. I'm very happy to be here today. As Ruth said, my name is Donna Smith, and I've been passionate about the natural world around us my entire life. This love of being outside is basically in my blood. I got that appreciation from my grandfather, whom he was from Poland. We called him Jodge. And he loved to grow plants, roses and lilacs, and plant containers full of petunias and geraniums that to this day I probably still put petunias and geraniums in pots, you know, many, many years later, kind of in honor of him. And I spent time with him as a kid growing up in the little backyard in Chicago behind our house that was on a main thoroughfare, and looking out at the alley. But he made that backyard beautiful, so we didn't really see the alley behind the yard. And I spent time with him tending the plants and eating the wood sorrel out of the garden as I was pulling the weeds from the garden, and sucking on the nectar from petunia flowers. When we moved to the suburbs, I helped my dad in the yard, and Jodge would come out every Sunday and spend time with us. I was happiest when I got to go to camp every summer, starting when I was about 9 or 10 years old. My brothers were really happy that I left for a while too. And I learned to swim and canoe, and I hung out with the naturalists and learned about wildflowers and trees and bugs. And I would look up at the stars at night because there were so many out there. Well, you know, when you're in a place that doesn't have all those street lights and things, you can really see a whole new world by just looking up at the sky. And as kids, we never spent much time inside. I'm not even sure my mom knew where we were most of the time, not like parents and their kids today. We were always out and about, getting dirty, climbing trees, and just having a whole lot of fun outside. In junior high, I remember carrying plants home from school, and I was telling my husband, I had armfuls of them and tucked them into something on my bike and rode home on my bike with these plants to take care of them so that they wouldn't die over the summer, because there was no one there to who was responsible for taking care of the plants that were in the small greenhouse that we had at school. And so I took care of them so they would survive and be there for us to enjoy again in the fall. In high school, I joined an explorer post, and we were a group of about 15 girls participating in a variety of outdoor activities. We camped, cooked over an open fire, and explored the outdoors. So that love of being outside, being in my blood, just kept me going. My passion in caring for Mother Earth and protecting and nurturing the environment steered me toward a program in natural resources when I started college. I went to UW-Stevens Point and spent as much time outside as I could. I have fond memories of hiking the trails at Schmeekly Reserve, an oasis within walking distance of campus. I took a different path after college, however, and got a job working in an office. And I really missed the outside, the plants, the fresh air, the sounds of birds chirping, and the sunshine. One day at work, I got up from my desk, walked into my boss's office and said, "I'm not happy here." And she knew right away. She was not happy that I was going to leave her, but she really helped me to figure out what that new path in my life was going to be. And I'm very thankful for the time and energy that she spent helping me get out of a place that I wasn't happy in. And I was truly blessed to have somebody who was that understanding and caring to know that. So I went back to school and completed a degree in horticulture and began a 22-year career as a horticulturist at a 1,700-acre museum of woody plants outside of Chicago. It was heavenly. My hands were in the dirt every day, the sun was on my face, and I just loved it. I worked to create environments for plants and for people to grow and to thrive. I created beautiful spaces for visitors to enjoy and shared my gardening expertise through educational programs so that others could learn to do the same. I was truly thriving in my new environment. Robin Wall Kimmerer, author of the book Braiding Sweetgrass, says this: "People often ask me what one thing I would recommend to restore relationships between land and people. My answer is almost always plant a garden. It's good for the health of the earth. It's good for the health of the people. A garden is a nursery for nurturing connection, the soil for cultivation of practical reverence." This is one area that I helped to plant at the Morton Arboretum. I met my husband, PJ, while working at the Arboretum. He worked there as well. Our first date was going fishing. I wasn't much of a fisherman. PJ is an awesome fisherman. I have such respect for the skills that he has. I had no clue what I was doing. As a kid, I used a pole, and my mom gave us bacon and cheese to catch the sunfish at the Park District Lake. But soon after PJ and I started to date, we were introduced to fly fishing by a family friend, and a whole new outdoor world opened up to me. I love to watch people cast a fly rod and make those beautiful loops. Who's seen a river runs through it? Okay. I had never seen a river runs through it, had no idea what that was all about, but the line soaring through the air is what really drew me in. I thought there is such beauty in that cast and all the timing and the patience and everything that it takes. But I was hooked right away on fly fishing. Fly fishing was this engaging new experience for me. I discovered new skills and traveled to places I'd never been. I'd never been to the Driftless area in Wisconsin, and I'd been to Wisconsin all over the place my entire life and had never been there. And I developed a lot of new friendships through the sport. Fly fishing and I became a part of each other. I learned to move and to pause and to feel and observe and hear things in a whole new way. I learned to stop and look and listen. I felt like this was all so new to me. I had to be more patient with myself and aware of many things while fishing. Was that a fish rising in the water, or was that something falling into the water and creating those rings? Was my shadow landing on the water while I was walking along the creek, and was I spooking the fish? What bug was that was flying around in my face or over the water? As a horticulturist, I had to be very conscious of all those kinds of things: the water, the weather, the bugs. But these things took on a whole new meaning when I started to fly fish. A good friend of mine calls fly fishing the Zen sport. We use all of our senses when we're fly fishing. We're watching, we're listening, we're touching things. So you really get engaged, and you don't remember that you have to go clean the garage out, or you've got a big project at work that needs to be finished today or tomorrow. You're thinking about all these other things because you're totally engaged. when we're out fishing, you're watching for the fish to rise, you're looking for the bugs on the surface of the water so that you know what you might feed to them the next time you cast out a fly rod. And you feel the line in your hands, and you can feel that fish strike at the end of your line when he takes the fly that you have. So, and also sounds can give you a clue what's around the next bend in the river. Fly fishing can be really relaxing and calming. It can also be pretty exhausting at times and exhilarating at all at the same time. It's really quite an experience. So right now I'd like to get you to participate in a bit of the experience this morning. The title of my talk, Stop, Look, and Listen, There's Beauty All Around You. So let's stop for a few moments and be really present in this place. So get comfortable in your chair, clear your mind, relax your shoulders, and just pause. Set aside outside thoughts. Pray or meditate for a moment. You might start with a deep cleansing breath. You might close your eyes and exhale and just stop and clear your mind and be present in this moment. Now take a few breaths as you look at some of these images on the screen. And as you look at them, what do you see? What feeling do you experience as you look at some of these images? And what does this make you think of right now? We can also learn things by listening to the sounds around us. Now, this slide is just a picture of a stream. It's beautiful to look at, the sunshine on the water, the rocks, the grass, some yellow flowers. And if we can get all the technology to work right, the next slide is one of experiencing standing next to that stream. And I want you to listen for what you can hear in this. And this is a totally different experience when you stop and look and listen. So I want you to think about the pictures that you saw and what you heard in that little bit of audio. And take just a moment. So what's one or two words that describe what you experienced with those, looking at those last few slides? Anybody?
Grateful.
Peaceful.
We were saying tranquility.
Tranquility, love that. Awesome. Anybody else? Calm.
Early spring.
Yeah, there were some spring peepers, I think, in that. Yeah. It's hard when I was trying to find a video that had more than just the sound of the water. And then I had one that had all these birds, and it was great. And then I'm like, but there's no water either. So we can look at pictures of trees and flowers and even fish in books or on the screen, but getting outside to see the plants and walk on the rolling hills and go out and catch a fish that gives you a better appreciation of your surroundings. We have opportunity every day to experience the world around us and experience that deep connection with ourselves, others, and the natural world. Often we forget about the little things that can bring us joy. But they are everywhere, and if you take time to stop, look, and listen, you'll see them. Author Steven Ramirez, who has written several books, numerous articles, and has a regular column in a magazine called Fly Fisherman, writes fondly of nature, relationships, and how fishing connects and restores us. In his book, Casting Forward, he writes, "Immersion in nature has been clinically proven to heal people physiologically and psychologically. Nature therapy involves being mindfully present in the moment, with intention, and without judging. For me, river therapy is the best medicine," he says. And I would agree. Fishing is therapy. When I go to the water, I'm comforted by my surroundings, and there's a feeling of serenity. Those feelings are what called us back to the Driftless area for many years, and eventually why we moved from the hustle and bustle of the Chicago suburbs to live in a rural home outside of Westby. Fishing is why we came to Wisconsin. We listened to our inner voice saying, you need to be outside and closer to nature. You need to connect with what makes you happy and what rejuvenates you. PJ quit his job of over 26 years because he was drawn to the water and really wanted to guide people and take them fishing and help them with that experience of being outside and catching a beautiful fish and enjoying everything about that experience. And so he left that and we moved to be in a place where we could do that and help others do that. So that connection, drew us to the home that we live in now. It's a renovated 1890s one-room schoolhouse that was moved to the property where it's at in 2009. It's on a sloped piece of land, and when you sit in the living room or on that porch that wraps all the way around the house, you feel like you're sitting in a treehouse. That was what one of my friends said the first time she sat down in there. She's like, we're in the trees. Feel like we're in a treehouse. And that shade provides a nice, cool place to be, and there's lots of shelter for birds and insects, and we can drive a short distance and walk into the water, cast out a fly, and hope that we might connect with a fish. Fishing has taught us so many things, to be patient with ourselves and to be humble. We don't catch fish every time. Sometimes they outsmart you. I've learned the importance of practice and building my skills and about taking care of myself so that I can spend 8 hours casting a fly rod or have the stamina for multi-day trips. I went to Canada and PJ said, you need to get in shape and be ready for that experience. And so I did, and I had a good time because I had prepared for it. We've learned to be more spontaneous through our fishing adventures as well. And it isn't all about catching the fish. It's about having fun. It's about having positive fishing attitude. Stephen Ramirez wrote fishing isn't just about fishing. It's about belonging. It's about caring. It's about sharing moments and making memories. Like the creeks and streams and rivers, we're all connected. There is fish, though. And I've connected with a few. Nature is all around us. It's a gift we share every day. We depend on the earth to sustain us through our everyday lives. Food is grown in the soil, trees grow to produce lumber to house us, and big trees provide shade to cool us. The rain falls and provides water for crops and replenishes our rivers and streams. We need to stay connected to nature and be good stewards of the world around us. This next quote refers to fishing from a boat on a river. We float downstream in a craft called a drift boat. It's kind of a fancy rowboat. We mainly cast towards the shore as we float along. We don't go back up in most cases. We just continue to go downstream. So this quote, "We cast again and again as the river pulled us ever forward. And that's the thing about floating on moving water. Like life, we often get only one brief chance to connect. And then the river and life moves us out of casting range. Life and fly fishing are much the same when it comes to our relationship with each other, our tribe, or our planet. Often there are no second chances." So we have to grab those moments while we can. We are all interconnected. All things have the ability to give and receive. The natural world around us gives us so much, and we can receive something from it every day. Hope in the new day, the sunshine, a cool breeze, or water that flows in a stream or falls from the sky. We must take care of what we have, because we only have one earth. My hope this morning is to inspire you today to be more intentional about recognizing and celebrating the beauty that's all around us. Get outside to refresh yourself. It doesn't have to be days or even hours. It might just be minutes. Just a few minutes outside can do wonders for the soul and for their mind. A friend of mine told me a story that she had read about a woman who sits outside for 15 minutes every day. Every day. Rain or shine, or 32 degrees. She's challenged herself to stay connected with the outside world. When was the last time you connected with nature? If it's important to you, I hope that it is, what can you add into your daily routine to bring you that connection? As a horticulturist and as an angler, I learned to stop and smell the roses. I hope you will challenge yourself today to go out into the world and do the same. And when I was putting all of this together, I found this quote by a man named Ralph Smart, who said, "There is no Wi-Fi in the forest, but I promise you, you will find a better connection." He was asking if I'd ever been to any of the caves that are around in the Driftless area, and I have not had an opportunity to explore those. There's a wonderful movie called Decoding the Driftless. Have you heard of that? And if you haven't seen it, it's a wonderful film, and they do have, I think they have a sequel to it now as well. And it really explains well, like, the geology in the area and just the uniqueness of this place. And I went to school in Stevens Point and I'm not even sure any of my friends who were in the College of Natural Resources knew about the Driftless area. I went to a wedding and drove through to like Mount Horeb area and was driving through all those valleys and up the bluffs, and I had no idea where I was and how wonderful that place is. Probably good so that I didn't mess up my college education by wanting to spend all my time fishing there. But
two questions. Did you take all the photographs?
I took some of them. A friend of mine that I've known since college, she took many of the pictures, and between her and PJ and I. So how long did it take me to satisfy me? That took a long time. So we've been doing this since about 1996. I think that's about right. You can learn. You could learn enough in a couple of days to learn how to cast, to get the line into the water. And then from there, you just work. You know, it's kind of that lifetime of work. I taught with a gentleman who's been fly fishing for over 60 years. And he would help me teach some clinics to brand new people. And he would every time tell them that he's been doing this for over 60 years and he learns something every time he goes out to fish. And it might be, we were just at a conference in Vermont and I asked somebody that I admire as a wonderful casting instructor, and I asked him for some tips to help me with my distance casting. And he sat at the table and moved his arm and talked me through how to do all this. And the next time I can go outside actually with a fly rod in my hand, I want to practice some of those things that he told me. So it can, you know, you could learn enough in a weekend to go out and try it. And I always tell people, go to a pond that's got bass and bluegill in it. That's how we started. And you will have some success because you can get the fly in the water and you can, you know, hopefully connect with a bluegill. Bluegills fight like crazy. They think they're way bigger than they are. And they're really, they will take your fly if you can get it close to them. So right off the bat, that gives you that success that keeps you motivated to keep going. And so it's just, you know, you can learn enough to get started, and then it's just continual learning after that and improving your skills. Great question. Thank you.
This morning, so we really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. Thanks.